All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
Harder than you know, people. The struggle is real. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, February 2nd. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's getting about as much airtime as Dom and Crute these days on this radio station, joins us once again because it's Thursday. We're doing Hometown Health at 7:30, and she's nice enough to hang out here between now and then. How are you?
Oh, so good. Every time I hear that intro, I just smile and shake my head a little bit, Pat.
It's just my favorite line from broadcast news, the Holly Hunter character in there being questioned by, of course, some station exec, network executive. And well, we know my feeling on the suits out there. Coming up this hour, you can kill the COVID emergency, but COVID can still kill you. We'll talk about how President Biden is winding down the federal government's COVID-19 emergency program. But what exactly does that mean in a pandemic that's still killing hundreds each day? So Dr. Lyerly is joined by Dr. Ben Weston as we talk about that, plus the new FDA vaccination guidelines. Luke Mathers joins us at the end of the hour, and we'll talk about Charlie Behrens, for cripe's sake, who has a podcast, and that podcast is now coming to Civic Media. You'll hear it noon, Saturdays, and Sundays. So listen for the Charlie Behrens Cripes Cast.
That's podcast. So much fun. And so, like, it's well placed here, right? Like, we own Charlie Behrens.
Yes.
You know, he's so Wisconsin, and so are we.
Well, especially a guy that created the Manitowoc Minute, because mm-hmm. I mean, we've got Aaron right here. And Mr. Zommers is, you know, you've heard of Florida Man. He is Manitowoc Man.
He's our,
when those stories come up, I think of him.
I don't know if Manitowoc carries the same amount of prestige and
prestige
the same level of I don't even know, buddy, what to call it, just disruption.
Buddy, I married a girl from Manitowoc County. I know about you. I know about your type out there. And Lyerly here is from Kakana, right? So you're not too far away from the county line.
That's right.
Yeah, not too far.
Still proudly wearing my ghost shirt today.
So
scare him to the left, scare him to the right, sneak up behind him, and poof, they're out of sight. Ghost, good, good, good ghost. Yeah.
Oh, please tell me there are photos.
Oh, baby.
Of that era. Oh, that's so great. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Carolyn Fidler, Courier Newsroom political editorial director, Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, and UW Eau Claire athletic director Dan Schumacher, all the usual Friday guests here. Kristen Lyerly, one of our usual Thursday guests here. And before we get into the COVID pandemic in the next half hour, there are a few stories here more related to your work as a physician, specifically in OBGYN, but just as a physician overall, that I thought we would talk about in this segment. And I'll start with the pandemic and a headline that deaths among pregnant women and new mothers rose sharply during the pandemic. The fatalities occurred disproportionately among Black and Native American women, and they were linked not just to medical complications, but homicides and accidents as well. I mean, the pandemic was completely new ground for us. There were people who had to stay home, and there was a fear that that would increase domestic violence. Looks like that probably played a role as well. Kristen, as a healthcare provider, especially for pregnant women, I mean, now looking back, and again, the pandemic's not over, but looking back at these past 3 years, what would you say to about a story like that?
Well, you mentioned homicide, drug overdoses, suicide, motor vehicle accidents. All of these things are actually the leading causes of death in pregnant women. It's not preeclampsia or ectopic pregnancy, which are still very significant, but it's these other things that are actually preventable. The CDC recently published a report that said 80% of the maternal deaths in this country are preventable. 80%. We could do something about this if people had access to care. And that's where living in a state like Wisconsin, where we know it would be so simple to just expand Medicaid, make sure that these pregnant and postpartum moms had access to the healthcare that they need and deserve for that full year after they deliver their baby. Because, you know, as soon as the baby comes out, the pregnancy is far from over. Anybody who's had a baby in their lives understands that, man, that's just the beginning of a whole new adventure and so many opportunities to intervene, solve problems, and make sure that moms and babies and families are healthy for the long run.
And it notes here in the article, even before the pandemic hit, the U.S. was the most dangerous place in the industrialized world to have a baby, mm-hmm. with the greatest risks in Black and Native American communities. There is so much room to do so much better, and the pandemic only, you know, helped bring some of these things to light. Another thing that folks are talking about that we'll do in the last minute of this segment is an article that we first saw in the Green Bay Press Gazette about the way that suicide rates are climbing in Wisconsin overall, and to such a degree in rural Wisconsin, and the factors that come into play. And Kristen, again, you being in an area with a lot of farming going on, see the factors. And not that all the story can do like this is build awareness, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big part of the problem. And the story gets into, how do you talk to these farmers who they take everything so personally? You know, the crop doesn't get harvested on time. Well, they didn't plan well enough. They, you know, it's always, they always feel like it comes down to their fault. And I think that gets reflected in a lot of these people who choose to take their own lives because they're desperate. They don't know what resources are out there. This is personal for me.
Yeah, and for me as well, there's a connection. Let's take a break, talk more in just a bit on Up North News Radio. There's a reason I picked this song for a bumper. And
what's the reason?
it actually has something to do with the Grammy Awards, which are this weekend, which is why I asked for Break My Soul by Beyonce, which is one of the nominees for Record of the Year. And we're going to talk more about that in a few minutes. But Dr. Kristen Lyerly is with us now, and we're talking about a few stories related to healthcare right now. And we had just been talking about the alarming climb in the suicide rate in Wisconsin, and certainly throughout rural America as well. And I was able to find the story as well on Yahoo News. And I just wanted to point people in that direction because the article ends with resources that people can turn to if they're feeling like they're in crisis. And I wanted to share it from this article, what they said about the hardships that are faced by farmers. They put it into five categories. And if you see any one of these happening to an alarming degree, reach out for help. There's acute interpersonal loss, like a spouse leaving. There's rugged individualism, which would be a man facing new limitations. There's financial stress, like a phone call from the bank. The pressure of providing, meaning the struggle with the crops. And of course, the lethal combination of alcohol and firearms, because firearms are readily accessible to so many farmers. Now, Kristen, of course, that's not limited to farmers. I'm sure in your patient load, I don't know how you divide these kinds of crises, but you have to see them all. And I can only imagine, you know, the number of times you've had to suggest to somebody that there might be other resources, but at least you're there to suggest the resources.
Well, the key really is just getting to the point where somebody is willing to talk about it. And that's another thing that they mentioned in the article. You don't just ask somebody, are you depressed? But you have to ask them something more subtle, like, how'd you sleep last night? Or how, you know, what's been going on in your life? And kind of tease them into a conversation where they're feeling comfortable and willing to start talking about it. These are hard topics. And a lot of, and I don't want to like put men on the line or anything, but I think especially for men who have this cultural norm that they feel like they need to adhere to, that they can't share their feelings and they have to be tough and they have to be strong. But man, there are so many guys who are suffering in rural Wisconsin. They don't feel like they have resources. They don't know who to turn to. Just starting that conversation and carefully finding your way and discovering these resources can save lives. And that has a giant effect on not only that person, but the people in their family, the people in their community, really everyone in their sphere.
Yeah. Don't do it for yourself. If you don't want to do it for somebody that you love, that mm-hmm. you don't want to put them through that kind of pain. And of course, I wanted to give you a little time to talk about an article that Kia Vakil posted at upnorthnewswy.com about how Republicans have introduced a bill. It obviously won't pass this session, but who's to say if a Republican's elected president in 2024, where Republicans would want to create a government-run anti-abortion website. And not only would it give misleading or erroneous information about pregnancy and healthcare, it would also collect the personal information of women who go on that website thinking that they're looking for help. And instead, Kristen, they could end up having very critical care be delayed.
Wait, they want more government?
Yeah, they want more government. Can you imagine that?
That's so crazy. What are they thinking?
Yeah, yeah, big government in your schools and in your entertainment and in your bedroom. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when Republicans were the party of limited government. But no, this would be a big one.
Limited government when it's convenient for them. This article has me so hot. It has me so angry because I have dedicated my life, as have my colleagues, to making sure that people have comprehensive, thorough information about all of their options, evidence-based information, so they can make the best decisions for themselves within the context of their own lives. But this bill would not even allow people to talk about abortion as an option. It takes out a giant chunk of the counseling that we do with our patients and only directs people to centers that offer pregnancy care and support, which sounds great on the surface. I mean, on the surface, this bill sounds like it's really a good idea. But when you look at the actual details, it's 50% of what should be offered. And that other 50% is critical information for everyone.
And if this sounds familiar, think of what I said last hour about what the Florida governor is doing to basically erase Black history from the education curriculum. Much like you just said, you can end up having what appears to be a high quality education if you don't know what you're missing. If you don't know you're missing that very honest, rough, but real part of Black history, the same goes for healthcare. It can have all kinds of good information, but if it's incomplete, it's not helpful.
Not just incomplete, but within that bill is a tracking element, which seems innocuous. Share your information, your zip code, and we'll help to connect you with resources that are local to you. But there's also an obligation for the government to follow back up with you in these personal situations where your reproductive health is the topic that they want to know about. Do you really want the government tracking you and disrupting your privacy like this? I don't think so.
There's kind of a subplot in the movie, the new Tom Hanks movie, A Man Called Otto, that anybody that has seen the movie, this is kind of hitting with them that, you know, who all should have your medical information. And you'd be surprised sometimes in a not so happy way. Let's turn to some entertainment news on a little lighter side before we do Hometown Health. First, a couple of TV notes. First off, on NBC, The Blacklist is going away after 10 years on the air, which is noteworthy to me because I didn't know The Blacklist was still on the air. 10 years. We were dedicated followers of The Blacklist with James Spader in its first year because it was this great, again, great writing. You're pulling the layers back from this onion and trying to find out the truth. And again, if TV shows would just allow that original story arc to run and then quit while you're ahead, that would be great, but they never do. And so we gave up somewhere in the second season when we were like, we're never going to find the end of it. It's actually why, you know, daytime soap operas frustrate me that way. You never get resolution. Just as you pull Sweet Polly off the train tracks, she gets taken away again and tied to the train tracks somewhere else. That's life, Pat.
It's
unsatisfying. That's not what I want in my entertainment. So The Blacklist, apparently, did they ever catch Ray? I don't know. Another show that's, how long has Dr. Phil been on? He's pulling the plug on his show. Do you know how long he's been on?
Like 1 year longer than he should have. Oh my gosh.
Oh no, no, no. He's going off after 21 years, which is 20 years longer than he should have. Again, it was a very refreshing thing when he first came on the scene in 2000 on the Oprah Winfrey Show. It's like, you know, you need to pull your head out of your butt. You know, but at some point, I think like so many people in that position, you end up, you know, reading too much of your own press clippings and getting, you know, feeling like you can do anything.
Yeah. What happens with these doctors who get on TV and get a little bit of fame and then they forget that they're doctors before they were celebrities? I just don't understand.
They end up running for Senate in Pennsylvania and all kinds of things, which is, by the way, why I think we're going to have to start to limit your exposure here. I'm a little worried that somehow you're going to transform.
Or let me talk more about things like vaginas.
That's fine. You know,
that'll keep me on track.
Anything that helps people and does not harm them the way that some of those past stories would. The 65th annual Grammy Awards come up this Sunday as the Recording Academy bestows honors, and Beyonce is kind of the main headliner because she needs only four more trophies to ascend to the role to the height as the top decorated artist in Grammy history, which, again, we can talk about, you know, who's on the Mount Rushmore of music, but at this point, Beyonce is already on the Mount Rushmore of the Grammy Awards of all time, of everybody, and might get to the very top of the mountain if she gets that.
You talked about Shakira earlier and how hard she worked. Beyonce is the hardest working woman in history. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is just always putting it out there, creatively generating more and more material. And what an entertainer. Well-deserved.
Yeah. Also musically, it seems like we just got done watching the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony from this past year. But already, right on its heels, just yesterday, we found out the nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the 2023 ballot.
Who are they? So
here we go. Now, eight of their 14 nominees, eight of them are on the ballot for the first time. They include Sheryl Crow, Missy Elliott, Joy Division New Order, Cyndi Lauper, George Michael, Willie Nelson, The White Stripes, and Warren Zevon. This is the first year of eligibility for Missy Elliott and The White Stripes. Warren Zevon has been eligible since 1994. So here's the full list of nominees: Missy Elliott, Willie Nelson, Kate Bush, Iron Maiden, Cyndi Lauper, Soundgarden, Sheryl Crow, and George Michael. So you've got a whole mix of country, soul, hip hop, metal, pop, rap rock, grunge. It's all in there, along with Rage Against the Machine, The Spinners, A Tribe Called Quest, The White Stripes, Warren Zevon, and Joy Division New Order. And I think, well, just like this past year, whatever mix gets in, it's going to be a hell of a show.
It's going to be so good. I recognize all of those names, but I'm going to be really honest with you. I do not understand the contributions that Warren Zevon has made to music in general. And that's what I love about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because when they induct somebody, they show you this long movie that shows all of the bits and pieces, and you end up watching the performance and just loving it because you had no idea, but now you know, and you're enlightened.
It is. I mean, the little movies they make for each inductee are, like I said, they take you behind the scenes. If you're only a casual listener of music, let's say in my case, you know, Todd Rundgren, when he got in a couple of years ago, you know, I know him from, you know, the song Bang the Drum All Day and Hello, It's Me. Mm-hmm. But there again, there was so much more. You know, David Crosby passing away recently. How many people did not know until it was mentioned, you know, that not David Crosby, Graham Nash was instrumental founding member of the Hollies. I didn't know that. So
David Crosby and the Byrds.
David Crosby and the Byrds. That's the two dots I was trying to connect there. Now, apparently everybody thought Warren Zevon was not going to be on the ballot anymore. Billy Joel, I guess, really pushed to have him on the ballot one more time. Mm-hmm. I don't know the reason why, but that's what the news story said about it. So he'll be on there. Missy Elliott, I think, yes. Willie Nelson, look, if you're doing Dolly Parton, yes. You know, why wouldn't Willie Nelson be on there? Iron Maiden, okay. Cyndi Lauper. Now, again, you have a couple of great hits, but this is like they do with the Baseball Hall of Fame. They have that debate. Well, it's the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of the Very Good. So you have to, with somebody like that, Cyndi Lauper, Hall of Fame, or is she in the Hall of the Very Good? She had a few good hits, but that's it.
Again, I don't know. I liked her back in the 80s. She's mm-hmm. done some great things on Broadway. Like, there's more to this story. We need to know what it is.
Yeah. You know, Soundgarden would be another one of those for me. I know a little of them, but is it Hall of Fame worthy? Now, Sheryl Crow, I think it's automatic. George Michael, I think is automatic.
I think you have bias. I think you need to check your bias, Pat.
Why do you say that?
Because these are people you know. I know them too. They were all over the airwaves.
Why do you know them? Because they were all. Why were they all over the airwaves? Because they're great.
But there's more to it than that, and you need to know the rest of the story in order to understand the full picture.
Here,
follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
If it's Thursday and 7:30 in the morning, then it's time for Hometown Health, which means it's time, whether y'all are ready or not, Dr. Kristen Lierley is here. And you're just going to have to put a little pep in your step, because that's what she does for all of us, Kristen.
We have a really important topic to talk about today with an incredibly important guest who has been at the forefront of the COVID pandemic for now nearly 3 years. Can you believe it's almost been 3 years?
It really is. We mentioned on our Daily Almanac a couple of days back that the WHO had, you know, basically given it a pandemic declaration 3 years ago, and the three just felt weird, but it was serious. It led to emergencies at the state and national level. And now the national emergency is going to be going away, President Biden says, in May. But you can kill the emergency, but COVID can still kill you, is what I think we want to convey with our guest. There's still need to do all the right things. So we're going to talk about that, new vaccine recommendations, that and more that we hope answer the main question about COVID. Where are we now? So, Kristen, why don't you bring in our guest?
I am so excited to welcome Dr. Ben Weston. Dr. Weston is an associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He is a practicing emergency doc at Froedtert, and he's also the chief health policy advisor for Milwaukee County and the director of medical services for the Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management, amongst all of the other hats that you wear, Dr. Weston. Thank you so much for being here and for everything that you've done for us here in Wisconsin over the past few years and beyond.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk with you both.
Kristen's going to ask a few questions about all of it, but I want to ask from that overview standpoint. When we talk about 3 years into a pandemic, I just want to say, where are we now? Where is the entire COVID-19 pandemic as you see it at this state and time?
It's hard to believe we're 3 years in, isn't it? I was just talking with somebody about starting year four of the pandemic, and it is it's a bit mind-blowing. But I think we have made an incredible amount of progress in the last 3 years. And when I say we, I mean we, Wisconsin, we, United States, we, the world, have made so much progress on so many fronts. We have vaccines, we have boosters, we have so much more knowledge about how to treat folks that get COVID, whether in or out of the hospital. So we've come a long way. I think there is still a ways to go. I'm hopeful that we're turning a corner, though. I think you can feel it out there more than we have in the past. Everybody likes to talk about endemic. We can talk about endemic later if you want, but I don't know that we're there yet. But I do think that we're at a different point in the pandemic. We're not over it. There's still far too many people getting sick, far too many people dying, even if we don't see it immediately as we, you know, drive around your communities. But we've come a long way, and we should be proud of that.
Well, hundreds of people are still dying every single day from COVID. So this is far from over. But, you know, you mentioned endemic, and yeah, I want to get into it because President Biden is going to end the emergencies, the public health emergency and the national emergency as of May 11th. And it's my understanding that that is going to direct the CDC to treat this more like an endemic situation. So how does that affect us as a whole, and how does that affect us as individuals here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so, you know, the change to the emergency declaration will affect millions of folks across the country, and it affects them in such a complex way. You could spend an entire day talking about all the different ways that that declaration has helped people over the last few years and how that'll change in May, presuming we get all the way to May, presuming nothing else changes from a Congress perspective until then. But if we get all the way to May, there's going to be changes. There's going to be changes, especially to people who are uninsured or underinsured or undocumented, who won't be able to get the treatments, the vaccines that they've been able to get before without cost. And so it really just changes the landscape. It really puts COVID, like you said, in the category of everything else, which isn't necessarily a good thing, because if you talk to folks who are uninsured or underinsured, everything else is pretty hard to get.
Wait, now that seems like a new way of looking at it, because I think most people, they hear the COVID emergencies are going away. When they think of emergency, they think of restrictions. The restrictions are going away. The point you're making is there are opportunities and access to care that are going away.
Right. I think that's the most important one. I mean, I don't know. We talk a lot about restrictions. There's not that many restrictions going on anymore. There's not lockdowns going on. There's not, you know, but there is a lot of nuanced care. If you need your COVID vaccine, you need your COVID boosters, those are free right now. And they're pretty widely available for free to anyone who needs them. If you get COVID and you are older or you are sicker and you need Paxlovid, that can be obtained for free. That's not going to be the case in a few months. And for a lot of people, that's going to make a big difference. For people who are well insured, who can, you know, cover their co-payments if they have them or whatever else, their co-insurance, it's not going to be that big a deal. But there's many, many millions of people who do not fall into that category. And for them, this is going to be a big deal.
It just heightens the health disparities that we already know are there. I mean, we've got the most expensive healthcare in the world, and we've got the worst outcomes of any industrialized country in general. And here in Wisconsin, we've failed to do things like pass Medicaid expansion. So there is a giant group of people out there who won't be able to get access to these essential treatments and services. So pivoting to Wisconsin, how have we done in general? I mean, we always want to be competitive with the other states. Did we do a good job with COVID? Did we not do a good job with COVID? Where are we at? Well,
yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of different measures to look at. I mean, the ultimate measure, as depressing as it is deaths. When we look at deaths, we've had, we're coming up on, or we may have probably already hit, and we haven't quite seen the numbers yet, 16,000 deaths in Wisconsin from COVID. Now, you look at other states, many have done worse. Many have done better. We're kind of in the middle of the pack when you look at it from that. But regardless of how we rate compared to other states, for those families, those neighbors, those friends, those communities of those 16,000 people, it doesn't matter how we stack up. We didn't stack up well enough at that point when their loved one passed away. So for them, the impact has been tremendous. But thankfully, deaths are lower now than they have been. Now, like you said, we still have about 540 people dying every single day in the United States from COVID. That may seem high, that may seem low, but the fact of the matter is you add those numbers up, and that's the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. And the third leading cause of death is pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm. And I read this morning, it's the eighth leading cause of death for young people.
Right.
And that was shocking to me because I think we dismiss that. We think, oh, kids are going to be fine, but they're not.
Right. It's not just old people and immunocompromised people. COVID remains unpredictable in the effect it's going to have, especially for folks who haven't been vaccinated and boosted.
So let's talk for a second about the miracle that came through this pandemic, and that is the rapid development of a vaccine. Now, for those first, for that first nearly year-long period, it was perhaps the scariest time a lot of people will ever live through. And then the vaccine came, there was this great rush of relief, but then almost immediately on its heels came disinformation, came suspicion, came just some of the most outlandish stuff that is, that for whatever reason is still with us today. And I wonder, and I can say from secondhand experience, I know that doctors still get asked questions and have to dispel myths and things like that. Would you agree that that's still something that's prevalent in patients talking to their doctors and choosing to listen to rumors rather than science?
Oh, absolutely. I I'm sure Dr. Lyerly can speak to this too, but it's interesting living a bit in the two worlds of hearing on things like social media, on things like town halls, from groups, sometimes anonymous in social media, of what people are thinking, but then also at the bedside talking. I talk to almost every patient who I see in the emergency department, if they haven't been vaccinated, about the vaccine. And still the things I hear are often disappointing and surprising, but it's also encouraging that sometimes with a minute long conversation, these are short. Listen, I'm an emergency room doctor. I don't have a long attention span. So these are relatively short conversations, but still in a minute, 2 minutes, it's amazing what you can clear up. Simple myths. I heard from my cousin's friend that the vaccine causes X, the vaccine causes Y, they got this. And dispelling those myths one-on-one, it takes a long time, but dispelling those myths one-on-one does make a difference. So for your medical folks out there who are listening, whether you're a doctor, a nurse, a technician, whatever you are, those conversations with patients, they're tiring, they're fatiguing, but they matter and they make a difference. And you are the people who your patients look to for this kind of information.
You are so right. And as an OBGYN doctor, my patients are the most vulnerable and they're the least likely to get the vaccine. And that puts not only them, but their babies in danger and their long-term health. We talk about deaths, but think about the morbidity or the long-term health consequences related to COVID infections.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So can we just in the minute or two we have left, can we talk about the new vaccine guidelines that came out last week?
Right. So this was the FDA's advisory committee. And what they recommended was a simplified regimen. So they voted 21-0. It was unanimous to what they called harmonized, a nice sounding word. Basically, what they recommended was to simplify what is a complex vaccine landscape right now. There's first dose, there's second dose, there's booster, but did you get the bivalent updated booster? Did you get the previous booster? I just got a question from somebody last week saying, you know, I heard from my mother that I can get a second bivalent booster. Is that true? It's complicated. And the vote was to simplify that, to simplify it in the future into a single vaccine. You don't have to worry about whether you got the first dose, the second dose, how long since your booster, everything like that. It's just one vaccine that you can go out and get. Now that opens the door to a simpler scheduling. Maybe it's annual vaccines. I think that's probably the direction we're going toward. It certainly opens up the door to simplified messaging. Messaging has been complicated throughout all of COVID. So it simplified that. And it also opens the door, interestingly, to other vaccine development. You don't always have to get vaccine one and two to get whatever's next. And so we could see new and improved vaccines coming out in the future as well.
I bet we will.
Which is where this was going to go eventually, that things were going to get more consistent or simple or whatever you want to call it. But again, this was all brand new for all of us. We were all working our way through it.
But it's really making us rethink all vaccines and how they all fit together. Mm-hmm. And that's important.
Right. Absolutely.
Very much so. All right. Very good. Dr. Ben Weston, thank you very much for giving us kind of it's not the state of the union or the state of the state. It's the state of COVID-19. It's going to be around, but there are going to be different circumstances around it and still a need to take care of yourself and others. And we really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
We learned a lot there. And I think one of the things I wanted to bring up that I mentioned yesterday is once you again realize that folks in the healthcare field, you know, actual scientists are trying to get the word out about things, it shouldn't be a big surprise that the American Medical Association and its members have been drifting away from physicians and the healthcare community. Typically, they were allies, I think, on a lot of economic issues, perhaps. But you understand the drift when you have a party that is working so hard to undermine science.
And you've seen less and less of a push from those political entities about things like masks and ivermectin as it's been waning from the public conscience. But the medical problem, the scientific problem is still there. And we are still there pushing, offering advice, listening to people, and trying to make sure that everybody has what they need to be able to live their best lives.
When we come back, Luke Mathers gives us an update on Charlie Barron's and other civic media matters next. You're up north.
We can fly. Hey. I got you, babe.
One more time for Groundhog's Day. It's me and these same characters again and again and again, and the character includes Luke Mathers. Good morning, Mr. Mathers.
Good morning, Mr. Kreitlow.
How are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. Thursday kind of crept up on me a little fast here. I was getting really? Ready with the
Were there only the morning- 3 days in the week? I'm pretty sure there's still 7 days in the week. It comes when it always comes, you know.
When you're jamming in as much as you can, they kind of blend together some weeks. So this week, it came up fast.
Second hardest working man at Civic Media, which I say only because I still give that title to Chad Holmes because he has to cover things 24/7.
I was going to say, I could count at least a handful of people that are probably more hardworking than I, but yes, I appreciate that. Very busy team here.
None more valuable. Welcome to a segment I'm renaming Homeroom, Civic Media Homeroom, because again, not every show is on every Civic Media station, with the exception of Devil's Advocates, like this one for sure, to start the day. And so much like homeroom in school, we're just going to take this segment and it's going to be homeroom for all the Civic Media listeners before you all go off to your various places, whether it's Earl Ingram or Stephanie Miller or Todd Alba or what have you. And the big thing, the big homeroom announcement from Principal Luke Mathers is Charlie Barron's coming to Civic Media on a permanent basis.
Before the fun of Charlie Barron's, we've got a homework assignment. Next Tuesday, the State of the Union is being broadcast across the Civic Media Network. So the homework assignment is to be sure to tune in for that special coverage. Going to be anchored by our news director, Terry Bell, from 8 to 10 p.m. It's kind of a late evening State of the Union, Pat. So I apologize if you're going to have to, you know, stay up a little later than you used to. You might need a nap next Tuesday.
I'm just going to sleep.
I'm not doing a damn thing for it. It's,
You're not going to watch the State of the Union?
Is there still an internet? No, I'll read about it in the morning. Let me guess. Fair enough. The chamber stands up at some point and applauds. No, these are very valuable. It'll be nice to hear ideas. Again, that's been our theme this week. One side's giving you ideas. One side is doing bills about drag shows and, you know, whatever else. So
M&Ms.
Conservative talking points.
Yes. Blah, blah, blah. Yep. Blah, blah. All right. So that's Tuesday's homework assignment.
Yes. But before that, we kind of mess up the order a little bit because the fun is beginning this weekend, kicking off with Charlie Barron's Cripecast being broadcast across the Civic Media Network at noon to one every Saturday and Sunday going forward. So the Civic Media will be the exclusive radio home for the Cripescast beginning this weekend. So we're thrilled about that. It is going to be a lot of fun. And Charlie's doing a whole takeover of the radio station here in Madison this weekend. So beginning at 6 p.m. on Friday, tomorrow evening, it's going to be all Charlie Barron's radio, all the way leading up to your show on Monday morning at 6 a.m. So there's going to be a complete Charlie takeover here in Madison, and we're really looking forward to that as well.
So you're saying when the Devil's Advocates end their show on the station in Madison, Devil Radio, at the end of Friday, it's all Charlie Barron's all throughout the weekend until I show up and ruin the fun, 6 a.m. on Monday?
Yep, you get to come in and clean up after all the discussions of walleye and perch and
I was going to say there's
jolly good and it's going to be a lot of fun.
There's going to be so much to clean up here, the half drunk beers and everything else. Kristen normally joins me at 6:30 on Mondays. Maybe you need to come in a little earlier at 6:07 and help me clean up this mess.
Seriously, yeah, and don't forget to tell your folks about it, okay?
Tell your folks I says hi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Beginning not this weekend, but the following weekend as well. The Gravedigger will be joining Earl Ingram every month. It's gonna be beginning next Monday.
Is that official now too?
That is official. So beginning on Monday, You're gonna want to tune in for the 8 o'clock hour of the Earl Ingram Show in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. The Gravedigger will join Earl for that entire hour, and then that hour will be replayed across the Civic Media Network following the Cripes Cast beginning not this weekend but next weekend. So that first hour beginning Monday at 8 a.m. on the Earl Ingram Show next week.
Gilbert Brown coming back. How cool is that? I mean, look at Kristen's eyes light up from living close to Lambeau Field as she does to think that we've got a former Packer legend who's going to do a weekly segment with us.
Like, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
I know. Absolutely. And so it's going to be titled Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. And he will be joining Earl live every Monday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. And then that will be replayed Saturdays and Sundays across Civic Media radio stations on the 1 o'clock hour. So 1 to 2 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays will be the exclusive podcast hour for that edition of the Earl Ingram Show.
I mean, I thought we were done with big news with the $1 million ad giveaway.
Oh, and we've got a lot of work going on with that right now. We had more than 200 businesses sign up last week for the $1 million advertising giveaway.
Wow.
But if you thought that was the end of the news, get ready, Hayward, Wisconsin, because we're trudging through some snow to get everything turned on. But it is coming, Hayward. The Buzz of the North, 9:10 a.m. will be hopefully in the next couple days here. We had engineers up there this week, and we're getting ready to flip the switch and turn on the power very, very soon in Hayward.
You shut your damn mouth. This is this is so cool. More Civic Media in the Northwoods. You guys are creeping closer and closer to Lake Wissota, and this is so encouraging. This is great. I feel like the little invasion map is just filling in more as the Civic Media Empire shadow spreads across Wisconsin, bringing, how did I put it last night, Kristen, that you and Kirk Bangstad were like the pollinators in the garden in the garden of Wisconsin, progressive media, just buzzing from microphones to speakers and, you know, bringing that pollen of joy and good ideas.
Uncle Pat told this beautiful story about gardens and perennials and annuals, and we were all just like,
I just take the honey that you guys produce and I slather it on the toast. That is my morning radio show, and for that I'm thankful. And now we get to do it in Hayward too.
That's fantastic.
And then. But we can't say anything else, but I'm telling you, the next few words are going to be true and there will be more. You're not done after Hayward.
No, there's a lot of plans. I have been saying over and over again, 2023 is going to be a fun year for us here at Civic Media, and there is a lot yet to come.
I have a question.
Yes, Dr. Lively.
Can we have a road trip? I think we need a tour. We need to go to Hayward. We need to go to Chippewa Falls. We need to go to Richland Center. We need to be there.
We need
and
a bus.
Have some fun with our honey and our bread and some cheese curds. And
Aaron's got an idea for this.
Oh, I would just like to agree that we need to do that. Even if it means that I have to stay here and keep it all on the air.
Good. We're going to get working on this. I have some calls I can make.
I'm just trying to get you the keys to the Green Bay studio so you can broadcast live here, Dr. Lively. I am
actually hoping to check that out later today. So I'm going to hit you up for the location of it so that I can get there. Thank you, Mr. Mathers. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Pat.
Dr. Lively, so good to see you. We'll see you again Monday morning.
Can't wait. Have a great weekend one day in advance.
All right, thanks. And then tomorrow, Kia Vakil, Carolyn Fiddler, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher. Everybody have a great day. We will see you Friday morning.